All right, hockey fans, listen up, because we've got something special cooked up for playoff season. It's called the Daily Faceoff Playoff Parlay Challenge, and it's going to add some serious spice to your playoff experience. Now, here's the deal. Every playoff game, you're going to be faced with a handful of questions. It's like your own personal playoff puzzle, and it's free to join. And there are prizes, because who doesn't love winning stuff? Daily winners, you're getting hooked up with gift cards. Treat yourself to some nation gear or maybe even your favorite jersey. And for the big dogs, the people who can win an entire round, it's straight, cold, hard cash. We're talking about real dough for your hockey knowledge. So lace up those skates, stretch those thumbs, and get ready to show off your hockey IQ in the Daily Faceoff Playoff Parlay Challenge. Sign up today and play every game day at games.dailyfaceoff.com and prove your puck prowess.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
It's Garrison Price for March the 25th, coming to you from our studio. Built by Arbor Lee at the Wall Center deck downtown. Next time you have tickets to a game, make a night of it. Stay right here at the Wall Center. Call them. Ask for the Sakaris and Price rate. We want to do good by you. 604-331-1000. You'll get a very nice rate. Irfan Ghaffar in for the vacation. Matt Sakaris. Matt's back tomorrow. Hi, Irf. Hope you had a great weekend. And we are all a presentation of the Applewood Auto Group. Applewood Nissan in Richmond has the 2023 Qashqai still languishing about. Go get one. Finance at 2.99% for up to 36 months, or go electric with the 24 Nissan Leaf with up to $13,000 in cash back, including rebates. It's all at Applewood Nissan in Richmond, and it's all good at Applewood. How's your weekend, Irf?
It's great.
Yeah?
Yeah, really good. Beautiful day on Sunday.
Kind of crazy day. Like, that was a good day in late April kind of day.
There's a lot of walking. 14.2 kilometers on the old step counter on the phone.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Are you watching things? You're trying to keep things
high and tight before the playoffs.
Before you start to eat a lot of popcorn,
yes,
and hot dogs.
Yeah, popcorn in the press box, yes.
Yes.
Yeah.
It was a fun weekend for sport. There was a lot to watch. Like a triple header if you are a soccer fan on Saturday. We previewed that. Watched the Canadian national team, Whitecaps at home, Canucks at home. Boy, getting out of the Whitecaps game and out of the parking lot as Canuck fans were streaming. It was mayhem at around 6:45 on Saturday evening. So hopefully you enjoyed all that. Our poll question today, brought to you by Tim Hortons, and Roll Up to Win is back. Did you like that?
I did right off the tongue for you.
Up to Win is back for Tim's 60th anniversary. To celebrate their big year, huge prizes to be won, as you'd expect, like the all-electric Volkswagen ID4. How about a sun-soaked Hilton getaway? I'm due for one of those. Some cash, too. Daily jackpot of $10,000. Roll Up to Win today. Our question, what do you want to see happen tonight? We'll get back to Saturday in a second, but how about tonight? Do you want the Canucks to clinch, or do you want the Blues winning in regulation to pull within two of the Vegas Golden Knights? You can't have both. Canucks can't clinch with the Blues win. The Canucks can win and the Blues can win, and that's a kind of a go-between, but nothing really happened. The Canucks don't clinch. So what's your priority today?
I think if you're a Canucks fan, you want them to clinch on home ice and be able to do that. I like anarchy. I really do. I think that it's great. I think the race to who's going to finish in the eighth and final playoff spot for the Vancouver, the second wildcard spot, and see who the Vancouver Canucks are going to play should hopefully go down right to the wire. That team or whoever it is going to be playing some really good hockey and desperate hockey all the way through. But if you're a Canucks fan, you probably want them to clinch that playoff spot, be the first team in the National Hockey League to get that X beside your name and get it done and actually put another feather in the cap on the incredible season that they've had.
See, if they win, they don't clinch. Let's say they win and the Blues win. They don't clinch. Yeah. But if they open their eyes again this season, they do clinch. You know, they get pushed so far to the brink, they merely breathe, and they will clinch on their next game. And there's still all these games, three games left after this one on the homestand. Like, all that's going to happen. The anarchy means more to me. And I'm not Matt. I'm not ABV, anybody but Vegas. But I do love a little bit of anarchy, as you pointed out. I do love the storyline of a team that everybody was saying, it's not fair how they go and get everybody. And if that team misses the playoffs, team like that, as Drew Doughty would say, as he's in town.
Yes.
That's just delicious if they miss the playoffs after pulling all the strings and getting everybody upset. And then they aren't repaid Now, if they win, it should be noted, as much as I'm sort of cheering on the Blues to catch the Vegas Golden Knights, if the Golden Knights win, boy, they start to put some pressure on the LA Kings all of a sudden. Because the Kings have been playing okay, but they're not running away with that third-place spot in the Pacific Division.
No.
So while we have been sort of, who would you rather face if you're the Canucks, the Preds or the Knights, that's not written in stone yet that it's just one of those two teams.
No, and I think that when you look at it from the Canucks' point of view, and if you're a fan of this team, you have your favorites of who you want to play. Right? Do you want to play the Vegas Golden Knights? And like you just mentioned, Matt says ABV, anybody but Vegas. Mm. The LA Kings proved to be a tough out for the Vancouver Canucks as well. The Nashville Predators aren't going to be an easy team to beat either. Like, all of those teams coming in, like I mentioned, are going to play bank some desperate hockey down the stretch here. And the Vancouver Canucks are kind of in cruise control, right? Probably going to finish the top of the division, right? I don't know if the President's Trophy is going to be, one of those things that they want to get or if it's going to be another feather in the cap type of thing, but you're probably going to win the division. So now it's just wait and see and kind of get ready for that team that will already have been battle-tested heading into the playoffs.
I saw Harm Dial wrote a piece on this already. Like, it's a dangerous game to want to face a certain team. Not certainly for the players, but even for the fans. Like, it's just going to happen how it's going to happen. But I do agree with him that I don't think there is a team that is just like a slam dunk easy bet. Yeah. The way Nashville is playing 17 games with a point or more. LA's just so stupid in how they play that I don't know that you want to risk that taking on a team that slows things down like they do. Like, I don't know. I just don't like it. Defending Stanley Cup champs. Don't love that. Who are you hoping for? I think you just sort of take who you get.
Yeah, I don't think the Canucks can hope they get an opponent because in your mind you're praying for something, and if it doesn't happen, what have you been worried about? You got to take care of your own business, worry about yourself all the way through.
And I don't want the Blues to win and overtake the Golden Knights because, I think the Canucks will steamroll the Blues. I think it's possible. But that's not my – I'm just the anarchy thing. I'm just – I want Vegas out. A, because they're a dangerous team, but B – the fact they spent so much of the deadline and continue to make people mad, it'd be fun if they miss. So,
well, the thing about the Vegas Golden Knights is like they did it last season too, and then people were pissed off about it, but they still went and won the cup, beat them. It's saying, right?
You want to claim you're the best?
Who knows what Thomas Hertl is going to be when playoff time comes or when he gets into the lineup, right? You don't know the severity or how bad a lacerated spleen is. I mean, I've never had one. The type of injury you're going to be able to come back from if you are Mark Stone, but I mean, they're a formidable opponent. I mean, the Canucks could definitely beat them. They play them two more times this season, so it's definitely going to be fun to watch that team.
There's you mentioned the President's Trophy. We've sort of talked about this a little bit last week already, but there's five, seven teams that got a chance to win the President's Trophy right now. I know for constant contenders, the President's Trophy has a certain mystique of who gives a flying F. And for the Canucks fans of 2010 through 2012, yeah, certainly that was where they were at. If they were a good team for a long while, who cares about winning the President's Trophy because Stanley Cup's the ultimate goal? This team hasn't won shit in a long, long time. I don't know. You're not going to have a parade about it. You're not going to put up a banner about it, but it doesn't hurt to have home ice guaranteed, A. And given where you've come from, which is the depths of hell for the past decade, winning the President's Trophy is, I don't know, it's something.
Yeah. They do have a banner for it, but they didn't raise the banner.
Right.
Yeah, so the banner was there at the start of next season.
Yeah.
Canucks have 98 points as it stands right now. They're top of the league. And the next, it's 97 to 98. Canucks, Rangers, Panthers, Avalanche, Carolina. Dallas is an interesting one that's in there, but the season they've having. Boston and Winnipeg are the teams that round
it's
that
out. It's a dogfight.
Yeah, it really is.
Like, it's going to be worse. So at the end, you will have beaten all those teams who are right nipping at your heels. Like, it is. I know you've been conditioned as a hockey fan. The President's Trophy means nothing. I hate it. Given where this team has been, I don't know. I would celebrate it a little bit. Again, not a lot. Doesn't have to be like everything in this world. Doesn't have to be all or nothing. There are spaces in between. I'm saying devote a little bit of emotion to it if it does go their way. Canucks with a nice win over Calgary on Saturday. It was kind of never in doubt, and that's what you want a little kind of win. They're the better team. Make sure that you look like the better team. And I think on the judges' cards, they were the better team. Kept another team to two or fewer goals. That's 8 of 9 there. Another team under 25 shots. That's 7 of 9 there. Think about that. The last 9 games, 7 times, the other team can't get above 25 shots.
Yeah.
Like that's really good. And it's funny, it doesn't translate on the screen when you're watching as a team. Like, it's not like the other teams are never getting into the Canucks zone or never moving the puck around. Like, Calgary had a good spell there. Was it the second period, start of the second period, where they were the aggressor and they were spending a lot of zone time? Canucks just find a way not to allow shots to these teams right now.
Yeah, and they're getting guys that you don't think are laying out for blocking shots are. Elias Pettersson, JT Miller, Brock Besser blocked the shot, and I think the bench went wild. Wasn't last game, but it was the game before that. It's just one of those things, and I think that when you look at it in an overall point of view, Blake, those are the tangibles that Rick Tocchet talks about. Those are the things that you can't really equate on the stat sheet or what you see, like Pettersson laying out in that second period blocking a shot. You know, those are the things that they're going to need in the playoffs to hopefully go deep. But I agree with you. I mean, it's not just
block shots. I think there's the structure is keeping teams to the outside, and it's preventing them from getting good looks.
It's a commitment to defense. And when they do get shots, Casey DeSmith or Thatcher Demko, they see the puck more often than not. And chances are, if the goalie's going to see it, he's probably going to stop it.
Yeah. It's a perfect week. They go 3-0, and they've sort of ensured this homestand isn't wasted already. Like, they're only 5 games in, and they're 6 games in. They've already ensured it's not wasted because they got 4 wins under their belt already. And I know you're hoping, and they won't be done. They're going to get more. The question is, how many more? Only got the 2 games this week to finish up next week on Sunday versus the Anaheim Ducks. But you get 2 wins in the next 3, and you're feeling pretty good about this homestand. You've definitely made some short work. Heck, even if they went 5-3-1, not the worst case scenario. I mean, that's still moving things forward. You'd probably hope for more than just the 1 more win. But they've ensured now with last week that they are good to go. Elias Lindholm.
Yes.
Scores into an empty net. And yet, that's not the storyline. He missed practice again yesterday. And first of all, let's hear from the head coach, the company line on Lindholm missing practice yesterday.
Yeah, it's kind of a somewhat of maintenance. We got to look at some stuff and, we'll evaluate every day. That's kind of what we're going to go with right now.
Is it possible you might have to shut him down for some games before the playoffs to make sure?
Well, I mean, I don't know at this point, to be honest with you. It's about feel, about a little different. You know, it's like day-to-day stuff, so we'll see how it shapes out.
There he is, and you heard the follow-up. It's a good one from Murph. Do you have to just shut him down? Here's my guess. He's not playing tonight. There's no game day skate today, folks. coaches speaking right before puck drop, basically. To me, that stands to reason. Back-to-back maintenance days on practice days and no game day skate. Now, they're not shutting down a game day skate because one guy can't go. But if it's a 50-50 chance, the coach is sort of, do we even need an optional today? Well, if you have an optional and Lindholm's not there, that's two straight days he's not on the ice. The other team, probably LA, probably thinks he's not playing. It sets off a whole news story leading up to my guess he's not playing. If it was a 50-50 coin toss for Rick talking about whether or not I should have a game day skate, setting off a firestorm of, oh, Lindholm's out of the lineup, not worth it to him. Keep everybody guessing. So I'm going to assume with line rushes as they were yesterday, with tangible looking line rushes.
Yeah.
That looked like a lineup they could ice, as opposed to, you know, sometimes when they do line rushes because somebody's missing, there's like a sore thumb of like, why is that guy there? Because he's just a placeholder. It didn't look like that. I don't think he's playing.
No, I don't think you're going to put, you know, Pia Suter into that center ice role between Podkolzin and Amon, and then have Bluger center, McKayev and Lafferty if right. there was a chance. And, you know, yeah. I just don't think that was going to happen. Like, why skate like that if you're going to do that? And PDG, obviously, with Miller and Besser. But, yeah, I mean, it's an interesting one, right? Because we don't really know what the severity of the injury is and how long it's been bothering him for. But, you know, I agree with you, Blake. I mean, if I'm a guy that's going to guess, it all signs point to, you know, him not playing. But, obviously, we're not going to know until Rick Tocchet does his media availability, you know, later on this afternoon. And, again, it's one of those things where they're going to say, if it was the playoffs, would he be able to play and things like that? Obviously, yes, he is going to be able to play. But if you can get him off and you can get him the rest that he needs and maybe, you know, be off whatever is ailing him, then go ahead and do it. I mean, you've afforded yourself enough of a luxury in the points and things like that that you're able to give your guys rest if needed.
Or if it's a light week.
Yeah.
If they sit him tonight, they sit him Thursday versus the Stars. It's 8 days off from gameplay. No, we don't really have an idea of what it is. It's somewhere in the forearm area, you know, whether it's hand, wrist, something like that. It looks like it's probably something like that. You hope it's tendon, something like flared up. You get 8 days off. You probably make some headway into that injury.
Yeah.
That's a good chunk. It may not be enough, ultimately. Maybe it needs to be 2 weeks.
Yeah. I mean, if it was something that's been bothering him for a long time, maybe now it's starting to flare up a bit, like you say, or whatever it is. But, yeah, I mean, like you said, 8 days between gameplay. I mean, that's obviously a very
And only missing two games?
Yeah.
That seems like a pretty worthwhile endeavor.
I think if you're the Canucks and you're, you know, Jim Rutherford and Patrick Alvin, and you say set him.
Especially if they win tonight. You've clinched the playoff berth. You know you're at that point again. You get that fifth win on the homestand. You know that the homestand has not been scuttled officially.
Yeah.
You have a winning record on the homestand guaranteed.
Yeah.
So just park them versus Dallas again.
Yeah.
Now, that's the President's Trophy match on Thursday. But, I think you've proven you can probably beat the Anaheim Ducks without Elias Lindholm too.
You should be able to.
Let's be real.
You better be able to.
So maybe if you're in for a penny, you're in for a pound, and you just sit him until the road trip begins, and now it's back-to-back game. Does he need to play both games back-to-back? You keep nibbling off pieces here, but maybe you play him against Vegas, and you don't play him against the Coyotes the next night, next week.
I think the biggest thing that people need to realize is Elias Lindholm was the early acquisition before the deadline. So that was the Canucks making their splash. He wasn't brought here to be this regular season guy. He was brought here to help them, you know, achieve their goals in the postseason.
Mm-hmm.
So you're going to want to get him ready to play in the postseason, not games against the Arizona Coyotes if he doesn't need to play, not games against the Anaheim Ducks if he doesn't need to play. If you have the opportunity to get him healthy, get him back to 100% or near that if he's able to, as you head into the postseason, you're going to do that. Same with Thatcher Demko. Right, his injury was maybe 3 to 4 weeks when we first thought it. Maybe they sent him out a couple more games than that. Maybe it leans a little bit more than that just to get him ready to know they have these guys at 100% before they go into the postseason. The regular season, yes, really clinch a playoff spot, they're going to do it. The President's Trophy would be a nice feather in the cap, but nothing means anything unless you go and have playoff success.
On the injury front as well, look who dropped into practice wearing a resplendent looking.
You like that?
Skate jersey in red, by the way. It's just the practice jersey, but it gives you an idea because we were talking about red skate jerseys last week. So it gives you a little bit of a look-see into what that would look like. Non-contact jersey, hence the red. Dakota Joshua skating once again, and his legs have been there. Here's his head coach, Rick Tockett, on seeing him back.
Well, I don't exact day, but him being on, in that the first time is big. So whether how we accelerate it, see how he is on the ice. But the one good thing is he's got skating legs. So we'll see how the other part. But, yeah, we're excited to have him on now with a full group.
So he's been able to work on that all the whole time. Again, same sort of idea, I think, as Lindholm. Hand, wrist, something of the like. And it's to me, it's probably just pain management at this point. I would think he sat long enough that whatever needed to heal has healed. Mm-hmm. But they don't want to flare it back up, I guess, by bringing it back too soon. You know, and I have no idea if it's a hairline fracture. That's my guess. Those can be annoying. I fractured my foot in August, and I'm not an elite athlete. I don't know the bones matter in this case, whether you're an elite athlete or not. I am old. I fractured my foot in August. I still feel it. Like, play a game of tennis, and all of a sudden I do feel like it, they are annoying to heal. He probably heals a little bit better than I do, given age.
Yeah.
But bones can be finicky. It can be annoying. And I could see him missing 6 weeks, taking a couple slap shots and going, I still feel that.
Yeah. And so, the type of game that Dakota Joshua does play is a little bit different as well.
I think you got to tell him, you're not fighting.
Yeah.
The rest of the year, you're not fighting. Like, even in the playoffs, do not drop the gloves.
It's wild because Dakota Joshua's value to this team has gone up so high during this season that they can't afford to have him in the box for 5 minutes anymore either.
There's that too.
Right?
No, absolutely.
And I think that when he comes back, it poses the interesting question, what do they do with their lines? How long is Lindholm, if he's going to be out for a shorter or extended period of time before the playoffs? What happens when Joshua comes back? And that's the interesting one, because do they go and reunite that line? I'm not entirely sure, because Elias Pettersson, I bet you, really likes playing with Connor Garland right now. So if you're Rick Tockett, I mean, it's a good problem to have. You have all these guys kind of coming back, and you're able to put guys into your lineup in different spots. But I bet you that Elias Pettersson wants to have some chemistry with Nils Höglander and Connor Garland, keep that line together. So then what do you do? What's your next move if you're the head coach?
I've been a proponent of stacking the lineup, playing the Elias and Elias together.
Yep, I agree.
And reuniting the entire Blueger third line. Mm-hmm. I've been a full proponent of that. In the event that Rick Tockett doesn't go down that road, do you create another, and hard to believe we say this because you're adding Dakota Joshua, but to create another super line of sorts and put Joshua up with Besser and Miller.
Yeah, but then you just have, I mean, if you're going to go to that in the playoffs, and if teams are rolling four lines, you really going to trust a third line of Mikheyev, Suter, and Lafferty? Or Podkolzin, Blueger, Amon?
And that's why, I don't love
Amon, yeah.
I don't love that look anyway. I think you create a true fourth line of PDG or whomever with Amon and Lafferty, and they play 7 minutes.
And PDG then, can't even get into the lineup now.
Yeah. Well, whomever. I think the fourth line of the playoffs, and that's my argument to put the Blueger line back together, is play the fourth line 7 minutes in the playoffs. Come on. You're trying to, you need, yeah. You ain't got time to bleed here. You know, like four games, you can stack a line for four or five games. But I mean, I could see a third line of Blueger, Mikheyev, and Podkolzin.
Yep.
I mean, I could see that. I don't think you're apologizing for that if you're that stacked on the top two lines.
I think if Mikheyev can keep playing the way that he has been, then yes, of late. You know, if he goes back to,
it's been nice,
mid-January,
right?
February, Mikheyev, then maybe not. But yeah, I mean, look, it's a great problem to have if you're the Vancouver Canucks, right? You want to be able to have all these guys and have options. Like, you're not fighting for a playoff spot right now. Your games that, yes, you want to win these games and obviously, you know, stack some more points and you know, put the feathers in your cap for an amazing season that you've had. But in the end, you have an option if you're Rick Tockett. You can tinker with your lineup and see what works, especially in the bottom six forward group. And I think that the biggest thing is it just goes back to show that there was a glaring need for another forward for depth if a guy that goes down, like, at the deadline. Mm-hmm. And I know, you know, Alvin said that the price was too high and there wasn't a lot of quality out there, but there just could have been something that they needed to add it, I think, to kind of put this team over the top and to see if you did have an injury beyond than just their extra guys that are there now, who are you going to call up from Abbotsford if you have to?
A couple of quick hits I want to get to. Roenick has his own pair at practice yesterday with Zadorov.
Again.
And this is, I'm sure, just coincidence. But Cam Robinson pointing out the second half stats for Philip Roenick in a fabulous tweet. Tale of two seasons, he says, first 42 games played, 36 points, a plus 32. I mean, it was a spectacular start. The last 29 games, pretty good sample size. 9 points and basically an even player. And that's still with Hughes for the most part. But it shows that I don't know that you can just say, oh, the scintillating chemistry, you can't break them up. It's been fine, but it hasn't been scintillating. And Hughes' points have dropped off, obviously, yeah, in the second half, too. I don't hate this from Tocchet, just to see what happens here.
Well, and the Canucks haven't been dominating opponents in the second half of the season as they did in the first, right? They weren't scoring 6, 5, 6, 7, 8 goals a game in the second half as they were in the first. But it's an interesting one because the conversation, I know I've been on with you and Matt before, and I've just said I don't think that he's worth that type of money as a defenseman that can drive his own pair, that can be the guy, that can be the offensive guy. You know, they're going to want him to try and have that role. With Quinn Hughes, I mean, Quinn Hughes made Luke Shen a lot of money, to be completely honest, right?
Yep.
And I think that, you know, when you look at it with Philip Roenick, I mean, the offer of what was it, between $52 and $54 million from the Vancouver Canucks, I think they really do believe that's fair. The ask of $8 million, or what was reported that could be an ask of $8 million, was just ludicrous, in my opinion. Like, you go back and look at it, and if they can, like, they can't pay him more than what Quinn Hughes is making right now. I think that that's what we need to all realize and sit here and think that, you know, Philip Roenick, unfortunately, as the points have been that good in the beginning of the season, you see the tweet right there, a tale of two seasons, there is the drop-off. But that sort of drop-off where you go plus one and you only have 9 points in your last 29 games, that's something to definitely have to look at.
JT Miller had his name chanted, a nice little viral moment. Daughter was seen in the crowd, and they had a camera on her, and she wondrously looked around as her dad's name was chanted. And I have to say, too, like, the power play just looks better with Miller doing what he's been doing lately, just unequivocally. He didn't agree with the timing and the place of that particular chant, though. He said he was playing like the worst effing player on the ice, and he didn't deserve it that night. Love the honesty, by the way. And it, you know, and I know people have probably opined this before. To me, it's a great insight into the outbursts we've seen from JT Miller in years gone by, Irf, and that even if it looked like he might have been yelling at another teammate, he's probably just pissed off about how he's playing.
Yeah. I think that's what a lot of it is. I mean, the guy's a very emotional hockey player. And sometimes I know the banging on the back of the net and things like that, just stuff you don't want to see. But he wears his heart on his sleeve. He really does. He plays hard every single shift. He's one of four Canucks ever to have multi-90-point seasons. He's only been here for a few. I remember the day they traded for him at the draft. Travis Green came down and said that we're going to make a trade. And a lot of people aren't going to like this, but it is something that is going to be very good for this team and the future of this team. And the contract that went out for him, obviously, you know, a lot of people on the tail end of it aren't going to like it. But JT's been as advertised as a player. He's been worth every penny.
Well, honestly, there was legitimate criticism of that trade when it happened, not for the player but for the player acquisition cost. He's outrun that now. Yeah. I think he's outperformed any of that criticism. That contract that he signed, Irf, he might prove us wrong there, too.
Yeah.
Because if he gets to 100 points now, which almost seems like a done deal, I won't curse him because he only got the 99. We'd hate to see that happen again. But, you know, a guy with 200-point seasons, I know there's a lot of years left on this deal. Is it 5 years left on this deal? Mm. I still think he's a very serviceable player for the next two, for sure, if not three. And then what's $8 million look like 4 years from now on your cap? Like, it's probably not the end of the world if he's a third-line center anyway at that point, but he may outrun it all. We'll just have to see.
6 years left on the deal.
Six years. Yeah. I mean, he's going to have to be good for a while, but he's going to be good for at least three, I would say, and maybe even four. Oilers lost both their games. They played Saturday, Sunday. They lost them both, which is something for them because they haven't lost at all in the second half of the season. that basically hands the division. You got to play the games. Don't celebrate just yet. But 500 unequivocally to me gets them the division. Not that's not the math, but when you consider the Oilers will lose a few more games, 500 gets the Canucks the division, which is pretty unbelievable. And again, sort of at, per the President's Trophy conversation that we had, it's right there. It's right there for this team.
Yeah, it's right there for the taking. I mean, the Oilers, oh man, they got smoked by the Leafs. That was wild. And then the next day they gave up a lead. And then they gave, So the Edmonton Oilers team is an interesting one to watch. Like when they get on a roll, best team in hockey, they're two of the best players in hockey. You know, they've got the a third line. They've got a 50 goal scorer on their team and Zach Hyman. It's defense and goalie, and it's guys that, you know.
Well, Pickard, I don't think they can start Pickard.
No, they can't, right? Like, what are you going to do? You're going to bring Jack Campbell up?
He's played very well, apparently, down on the farm. That almost might be worth it, given how Pickard has played in the last little bit. But I think it's going to be Stuart Skinner or bust out there. Meanwhile, this is late breaking. This is the beauty of being live, is Jonathan Lekromaki. We knew he was in town. But we didn't know in what capacity he's been officially assigned to the Abbotsford Canucks. He's a member of the Abbotsford Canucks as we speak. He's not coming here to get nutrition and rehabilitation sort of marching orders at all. He's a member of the Abbotsford Canucks right now. For how long, we'll see. Game action, we'll see. That's up for debate. Nothing's written in stone. But he's certainly going to practice. And there's an outside chance that he plays. That there's only a few handful of games left.
Yeah.
And especially at home. They're still on the road, the Abbey Canucks are. So he will be just doing nutrition and some stuff for a few days. But he'll be practicing with the team shortly. And there is an outside chance of some game action in the AHL for Jonathan Lekromaki.
Good. I mean, what is taste of North American hockey, right? And you go and do it. And then before, you're probably going to be on the Swedish World Championship team. So he's got to get back overseas again. But get him here. Get him looked at. Go through probably what's going to be a rigorous workout or two. You know, I bet you the Daniel Henrik Sedin are going to be up there as well in Abbotsford, you know, putting him through his paces and kind of getting a good look and good feel for him. I mean, he had obviously the season that he had was nothing short of outstanding for him being able to do what he did and then obviously being the stud at the World Juniors for Sweden. But it's now, this is the next step in his career, right? Yeah. It's the trajectory. It's what you're going to do next. So for the Canucks, great to get him in your backyard. Great to get him looked at. He's probably going to be able to hopefully maybe come see a game or two if he can, because I know the Abbotsford that you mentioned is on the road. So he might be here for a game or two. But after that, you know, he's Abbotsford property, and it's up to their coaching staff and to see what they want to do with him.
Speaking of Abby, another 4-point game for Atu Ratu. I think he's got 9 in 3 games. And one of the goals that I saw, pretty nice release. Now, he's not, his goal totals are not gaudy. I think he's only got 16 goals this season or something to that effect. But that shot's pretty good.
Yeah.
And I'm not calling for Ratu this season. I'm just saying, good development there. Ratu just turned 22 a couple months ago, I think.
Just turned 21. November.
There's a lot of development left there for Atu Ratu. I'm trying to keep feet on the ground because I am skeptical a little bit, but it's a nice development there. Shout out to the Vancouver Giants. Playoffs beginning this week for them. They're beginning on the road Friday in Everett. Wanted to get to that. Men's soccer. Canada beat Trinidad and Tobago 2-0. Laren and Schaffelberg, the goals. Would have liked a more resounding win there. But especially hey, they
with,
got it.
Especially with the lineup that they fielded.
Yeah, like that was like, that was the next wave kind of lineup. Next up, June, a friendly against the Netherlands, and opening Copa America versus Messi in Argentina. So I think they might have to be better than they were in that game versus Trinidad and Tobago.
Yeah. And I think it's one of those things that, you know, between now and, you know, you look at June and the starting of that tournament, it's all signs are going to point to Canada playing against Messi. It's Canada versus Messi. It's not Argentina. It's Messi and Argentina. I mean, it is for him and most teams, but from the Canada's point of view, it's another test. I mean, reigning World Cup champion.
To be fair, when you're taking on minnows like that, they park the bus. There's 10 guys in the box. It's tough to score sometimes. So when you're playing a better team, the better team's not going to park the bus on you. So there's, you know, guys are spread out a little bit more. Maybe. I mean, Canada didn't look terrible. You think about Belgium in the World Cup game. Like, Canada did not look terrible against Belgium. Like,
no.
You play better teams, sometimes it opens things up a little bit. Who knows? They've got to be better. We'll see what it looks like come June. And yeah, I think that's all I wanted to get to. In addition, today's menu brought to you by Greta Bar and Grill, pregame, postgame, during the game. We're going back for the final game on April 18th, I believe. More on that shortly. 50 West Cordova, great food, great drink, and like-minded Canucks fans, so we'll see you there. Jeff Patterson from Rinkwide Vancouver on the drama around the Canucks that's good and otherwise. That includes Lekromaki being in town as well, by the way. Podcast side, don't forget, hashtags the best and worst of Twitter.com, including how to tackle in the NFL, which is to say you might not be able to anymore based on new rules. And Doan back on the ice in Arizona. Seriously. We'll finish the show with a bit on the Whitecaps, the PGA Tour, and some CanCon from March Madness 2. So stick around. We're back in a sec. So Harrison Price is always a presentation of Applewood Kia in Surrey. Get the 2024 Kia EV6 or the 2024 Niro EVs. Finance from as low as 4.99% for up to 60 months. Go check it out, Applewood Kia in Surrey. It is all good at Applewood. Hashtags the best and worst of Twitter. Or if you see what we do here is we go into social media and we get some newsy bits.
Okay.
Got some newsy bits. I'll start with the newsy bits. How about that? You can see how I go.
All right.
At Jeffrey Carlisle. Ooh, abrupt there. To follow on from Glenn's initial report, this is a quote tweet of a Glenn Crooks tweet, Jeff Carlisle reporting for ESPN. To follow on from Glenn's initial report, I'm told voting on a new tentative agreement is taking place as we speak. Voting ends tonight at midnight. This is Monday, and we'll see if this tentative agreement passes. This is the pro referees who have been on strike for Major League Soccer since the start of the season. They haven't done a single game here. We're on to match day six is now behind us in Major League Soccer. Generally, referees feel like the start of the season is their pressure point because surely leagues wouldn't want to use replacement referees, and the MLS has now for a month and a half. And there's been some moments, but it's not like it's been a river of complaints. It's been a trickling stream for sure, but that's about it. And I'm sure the refs were always like, okay, I think we should probably get back to work now. So I wonder how much they've conceded here in a month and a half.
Does Vanni Startini have a vote on the MLS officiating and what happens with that?
He might try to sneak into the meetings and be like, no, we're gonna close the door, keep the doors locked here for just a little bit. Vanni gets back this weekend. The question is, do the refs as well? That would be an interesting bit of kismet if they both return to action at the same time.
Well, that'd be wild. Referees are, we saw how terrible it was with the NFL, and then they had their replacement referees, and you know the NHL, obviously they're criticizing, but why is it always the MLS referees that we look at and look at decision and say, wow, they really need to figure it out, or it's always been this poor?
The thing with refereeing across the board,
yeah,
it's all bad. and it's not saying they're bad doing a bad job, it's just that it's a really tough job to do, and it's a really tough job to do well. Like, it just is. Things happen really quick in sport. That's why we like to watch it on TV sometimes, because it gives us a way better overhead view where we can see the action more clearly. I mean, you've been down at ice level. You've been down at field level.
Yeah.
It's hard. It's hard to see shit down there. Like I don't envy that. I don't think they do a very good job a lot of the time, but I don't think they can do a much better job because it's hard.
Okay, let me ask you this then. How much has implementing the fourth official completely changed the way that games are refereed now, especially in soccer?
How do you think it's changed it?
Well, I think now that there's another set of eyes, because before it was this referee's on the field and he has his two linesmen. If it's offside, it's offside. We're not going to review.
Yeah.
We're not doing any of that. So if you think something's there and you're a linesman, you know someone has your back. So you just can put the flag up on something. Or if it's a yellow card, referee's going to pull it out and then it can be rescinded. Or if it's a red card.
I wish I knew that the fourth official had sway. Like, I don't know how much power there is actually there. What you got for us?
Okay, well, let me go to at Canucks Place. So this one's actually quite interesting. Nils Höglander has more 5-on-5 goals, 22. Okay, just let me list these players. He's more than Connor McDavid, William Nylander, Leon Draisaitl, Kyle O'Connor, Nikita Kucherov, Sidney Crosby, Kirill Kaprizov, and Jason Robertson just to start. The guy barely gets any power play time. There is no surprise to me at all why his teammates love playing with him. And you talk to guys around the league, they hate playing against this guy. So there's no shock that the Canucks didn't want to put him in a deal for Jake Guentzel.
Wasn't there a live mic moment recently with somebody talking to Nils Höglander? What game was it?
Oh, I can't remember.
But somebody was like asking him why he's so mad on it when, and the glass mics picked it up.
Yeah.
He's a thorn in your side. I mean, the Garland Höglander thing seems really small, and you know, if you don't know the players, a weak option alongside Elias Pettersson. But Garland doesn't lose any puck battles.
No,
Höglander loses very few, and the two of them can score pretty decently as well. So, do you see that working in the playoffs? Is that a game one playoff winger setup for Elias Pettersson, do you think?
I think so, because I think they're going to go to Elias Pettersson and say, is this what you like? Is this one of the things that makes you happy? And he's going to say, well, yeah, don't keep having wingers be revolving doors as my wingers. If this is the way it sets up, I'm going to be interested to see the week before the playoffs what the lines look like and how much they stay together. But for right now, it's working out pretty well.
Yesterday at practice, well, you know, PDG up on the top. I mean, does Dakota Joshua slide right back in? We'll see. We'll see where he ends up taking line rushes.
Yeah, it's PDG Miller Besser.
Yeah. I mean, that's not going to be
a thing. No, it's not going to be a playoff line.
That's not going to be a thing. This is big news in the NFL, as the NFL has banned the hip drop tackle. And not often do we drill down on tackling technique here on the show. But if you've seen video of this, it's sort of tackling. You know, like you're using your weight to bring down the other player. Often what happens, what they don't like, is the legs crumpling underneath the tackling player or the rolling of ankles. It kind of, you know, it puts a lot of stress on ankle and knees of the person carrying the ball. But if you ban that, like how, what are the other methods to tackling, for heaven's sakes? At Rap Sheet, Ian Rappaport, Rich McKay, quote, do we have a problem? The answer was yes, end quote. This will be a hard one to call on the field. You have to see every element of it. We want to make it a rule so we can deal on the discipline during the week. That is responded to by Doug Farrar down in Seattle. Basically, the refs will miss it, and the league will fine the players later. That's the new normal. So that does sound like what they're saying, the quiet part all out here, that it's so intricate and so subtle a move. They're kind of admitting we're probably not going to catch this in real time, but we want to be able to find them later.
Well, again, it goes to officiating, what you just talked about, right?
Yeah, you're right.
So
yeah, exactly.
The referee's got to throw the flag. I mean, the big one was the Mark Andrews injury last season. He gets tackled, clean tackle, but his ankle is absolutely hooped for the rest of the season, barely makes it back for the playoffs. So I think you look at all of that, but just going down to some of these guys and some of the players and people that cover the league, like, this is a resounding no from everyone, especially on the defensive side of the football.
Yeah.
Like, essentially, I understand how the NFL is changing and trying to protect the quarterback. They're trying to protect the defenseless receiver, no more hitting across the middle and things like that. But this one is essentially, how do you tackle now?
Like, if you're a quarterback coming up to a receiver with the ball, then yeah, you can lower the boom on the guy and tackle him like that. But let's say it's a running back swinging out from the backfield. You're running with so you're beside the running back. You don't have the momentum at that point to just lower the shoulder and tackle the guy. You're both sprinting beside each other.
Yeah.
What you do is you grab onto that guy and you drop to the ground to take him down. That's the way it has always been.
Offense sells in sports, though, Blake. You got to get more points on the board.
Yeah, so you're basically going to make the tacklers now think, holy shit, like what, in that heated moment, how am I going to bring this guy down? And that thought process might be enough that the running back scoots away on you because you're thinking too much about the legality of all. At least that's their hope. I think a lot of guys are just going to be like, I'm just going to tackle the guy the way I always have, and I'll pay the fine if I need to.
Aaron Donald, the smartest NFL player, retired.
Just before this,
because how he's made all his money his entire career. Yeah. This is how he made all his money. But I got one for you. So the Arizona Coyotes have called up Shane Doan's son, Josh, and he will likely make his NHL debut this week.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, it's interesting because everyone thought that, you know, they were just drafting him on the basis of, you know, Shane Doan. It's Arizona. It's a great story. But he obviously did have a pretty good career playing hockey at ASU. I mean, that one makes me feel a little bit old.
Yeah. Although Dome played a long time.
Yeah.
So he's coming off a 46-point in 62-game season in the American League, 26 goals. So nice stats. Yeah. He is just a freshly turned 22-year-old. So he's got some development. He came out of the Chicago Steel organization in the USHL before NCAA. Good stats there. 70 points in 53 games of the USHL. Yeah, we'll see. He's 6'1", 180, so he's got dad's stock, yeah. It looks like. That would be weird seeing Doan in a Coyotes uniform again, you know? That's a good story. We'll finish on this. At Rick Riley. Remember Rick Riley? Back of Sports Illustrated?
Yes.
Call us if you ever win one on a course you don't own and operate. It's a quote tweet of a screenshot taken from Truth Social, which I believe is still a thing. Donald J. Trump. It is my great honor to be at Trump International Golf Club in West Palm Beach tonight, awards night, to receive the club championship trophy and the senior club championship trophy. This is all in all caps, of course. I won both! Exclamation mark in all caps. A large and golfing talented membership. Okay. A great and difficult course made the play very exciting. The qualifying and match play was amazing. A large and distinguished group will be there tonight. I'm sure they will be. Very exciting. Thank you. He won the club championship and the senior club championship, apparently.
Yes.
So this is a big golf club with great players, a large and golfing talented membership, as he put it. And the 78-year-old won the club championship.
Wow.
Sure. Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's his course, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's his course.
I don't think Donald is ever losing that one. He's taken a lot of L's recently.
He got a quote tweet from the current president of the United States, at Joe Biden. Congratulations, Donald. Quite the accomplishment. And you can just, the sarcasm dripping from those two very short sentences from the POTUS.
That would be the most painful round of golf to ever have televised, is those two playing if they ever did.
Oh my God. Well, it'd be a 9-hour round.
Donald might be funny to watch, but
yes. It'd be a 9-hour round. That's hashtags for today.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
All right, we're joined by our Canucks insider and daily reporter from Rinkwide Vancouver, the one and only Jeff Patterson. Jeff, welcome back. Fabulous weekend, I hope, and it was punctuated by a Vancouver Canucks win. A nice, tidy one, although I don't even know that is top of mind for Canucks fans right now, given some of the drama at practice on Sunday.
Yeah, a lot of the weekend was spent at Rogers Arena, the game on Saturday night, and then it was a season ticket holder event on Sunday. I think quite often the Sundays are days off for the players, but you got to do what you got to do to keep the season ticket members happy. So pretty good crowd on hand, actually, to watch the Canucks do their thing. And Yeah, surprise guest, if you will, with the return of Dakota Joshua. So that's some good news for the Vancouver Canucks. He's not going to play tonight, but the fact that he's back around the group, he is wearing a non-contact jersey, but still a big step in his progression to getting back in there. Maybe by the end of the homestand, we'll see. Of course, it can't all be good news for the Vancouver Canucks because as Joshua returned, Elias Lindholm missed his second straight practice. Now, I thought he played pretty well on Saturday night, and forget the empty netter. I mean, that's gravy and that's great, but I mean, the faceoff win percentage was back where you want it to be. Third period, Canucks locked things down yet again, and he's a big part of that. Penalty kill was really good, and so it's going to be interesting to see what happens here moving forward, but the fact that, you know, two maintenance days have been required, certainly some red flags around Elias Lindholm these days.
I'm prepared to be surprised, but I'm going to operate under the assumption he's not playing. He's actually been okay of late. It is an absence in the lineup, Jeff. It does, without him there, they do have to rearrange things. I know we saw some line rushes yesterday, so it's not like they just concede the 2 points. They'll play the game. But he has been a contributor, and I don't mean on the score sheet, and that's happened a little bit as well here. But it is a loss for this lineup, no matter how poorly he's played or under below average, we'll say, that he's played as a Vancouver Canuck.
Well, look, I mean, the mere fact that Elliot Friedman is talking about him on the new segment of Hockey Night in Canada, you know that there is some news value to all of this. And, you know, that was, again, he had a maintenance day on Friday, but he played Saturday. And then it was a question, would he be back at practice on Sunday? He wasn't. And so, you know, last week when he missed practice, they just slipped Teddy Bluger into his spot. And I kind of thought that felt like a placeholder. At Sunday's practice, Pia Suter, who was signed last summer as the third line center and has played all over the lineup and helped in different ways, but he's kind of come full circle. And when I saw Suter back in the middle on that third line, that kind of indicated to me that I think they're preparing to move forward here in the short term without Elias Lindholm. So, yeah, I'd be surprised if he plays in this one against the Kings. And I think the biggest area that they're going to miss him is this penalty kill that's all of a sudden become, you know, they're in a massive groove, 10 straight kills for the Vancouver Canucks. And they've been playing all these close games where a power play goal here or there could make a massive difference. And of course, the Canucks did get their power play goal in the third period on the second try the other night, but they went 4-for-4 against the Flames on the penalty kill. And, you know, the right shot center, the faceoff percentage that's the best on this team, and a penalty kill that's in an absolute groove. It also looks like Ian Cole's going to get back in after missing the last couple of games. And so, you know, that's two pretty significant changes because Noah Juulsen, I mean, that's an area that he absolutely has contributed as well. And that's where his value is for this hockey club, is on the kill. So they're going to have to move forward here, I think, one by necessity and one by coach's decision. Whatever the case, keep an eye on the penalty kill. I think that's an area of, it's been an area of strength for the last little while, really on the homestand. I mean, Colorado is the only team that scored a power play goal on the homestand, and they scored twice, one at evens and one in overtime that proved to be the winner. But it does feel like the Canucks are finally sort of sorting things out on the penalty kill. But if they don't have Elias Lindholm, yeah, I mean, that's going to leave a gap, and other guys are going to have to step in and step up.
Yeah, no morning skate for the Canucks as well either. I know it's a 6 o'clock start, Jeff, for the game tonight, but so we can keep guessing on Elias Lindholm. We're obviously trending in the direction that, you know, he may not be available tonight. So you look at that second line now, PDG moving up to play with Miller and Besser. What do you make of that experiment? And is he someone that you would put there? Or is that kind of just the way things are going to have to fall because you need another center now in the lineup?
Well, this comes back to this discussion that it feels like we've had every day since the trade deadline, and that is one forward short, right? So you move Pia Suter from wing to center, and now all of a sudden you got to have somebody play on that line. And it does sort of feel like we've come full circle to the way they started the season with Suter as the third line center, PDG up on that line with Brock Besser and JT Miller. Look, you know what you're getting from Fieldy Giuseppe. You're going to get an honest effort, get in on the forecheck against this Kings team too that gives you nothing. I actually don't mind, you know, based on this opponent, I think DiGiuseppe can play a role in getting in, being disruptive, and hopefully get some pucks and get them to Besser and Miller to do their thing. But we know that, you know, in a perfect world, Fieldy Giuseppe isn't a top six forward. He wasn't at the start of the season. People had concerns then. I think those same concerns exist now. So this is the issue with the Vancouver Canucks, who made their moves early, but struck out at the trade deadline. You know, the depth of this team, you take one player out of the mix and all of a sudden you can see some areas of weakness. Now, we've heard about committees all season long from Rick Tocchet and his coaching staff. And look, their committees are pretty solid when you look at the star power they possess, but you start to move players around. talked about that after practice yesterday and just said, like, some of this is trying to create internal competition, that Phil DiGiuseppe may not be the ideal guy to play on the wing with Besser and Miller, but he's given him that opportunity. If it doesn't happen for him, he knows that there are other, like, guy like Pod Colson perhaps will get a look there and has played at times with JT Miller over his brief time in the National Hockey League. So it's PDG in this one. And again, based on an opponent that is stingy and physical, I don't mind that. But over the long haul, I hope that, well, first of all, you hope that Lindholm can get healthy and get back in there and do his thing. And then it gives the Canucks some options elsewhere in the lineup. So let's see how it goes in this one. But it wouldn't surprise me if on Thursday against Dallas, you know, they come back and they have a different configuration and some new looks once again.
You mentioned Vasily Podkolzin. How much has he done to make Rick Tocchet's life a little more difficult when looking at his lineup as to guys that he needs to maybe take out of it?
Yeah, I mean, he's hitting everything that moves right now. He leads the Canucks in hits, you know, in his time. What's he played, 7 games now? Or I think maybe it's 9 games. Yeah. Whatever the case, he leads the Canucks in hits during that spell. So the offense hasn't been there. He did pick up an assist the other night, a second assist. But again, I don't think you're banking on him and counting on him to produce scoring at some point. Again, a 10th overall draft pick. You want to think that there can and should be a bottom line. But in the here and now, I think for him, it's just being about being disruptive. And he's done a nice job of that. And, you know, he's had some opportunities, hasn't shown much finish yet, still hasn't scored in this stint in the National Hockey League. But this is a guy that did score 14 as a rookie, so he knows where the net is. But, yeah, like I think he's done everything the coaches have wanted from him. Rick Tocchet has often talked about, you know, this team doesn't have a ton of guys that win their board battles as much as he wants. And last week he was saying, you know, if even of those guys, and he didn't name names, but, you know, even guys could just be 5 or 10% better in some of their board battles, that's going to go a long way. Well, Bud Colson's one of the guys, Hoglander, obviously, some of these younger players that are doing the things that Tocchet wants. And I thought it was fascinating the other day at practice, you know, probably 15 minutes before the actual group started, there was Tocchet out with Bud Colson, sort of that one-on-one coaching that we see a lot from Rick here throughout the season. And he was working on just that, on how to, you know, spin off a board battle so that you're not just engaging, but you're coming up with a puck and then, you know, able to break it out in your own zone. So, you know, it's fascinating to watch. I mean, Tocchet at his heart is a teacher. Yes, he's the head coach, but he absolutely seems to love spending those sessions on the ice where he can work with guys one-on-one. And so, you know, Podkolzin's here. He's in the NHL. He's playing every night, but he's still a work in progress. And Tocchet knows that. And he's doing his best to try to mold this guy into the player that he wants him to become.
He's on a career best possession, you know, in terms of Corsi numbers. He gets offensive zone faceoffs, so like he's put in a position to succeed. But you know, he's 54 like Corsi 4 percentage right now. I mean, that's he's keeping the puck away from the net. He's an even guy in terms of on ice goals for and against, and his PDO is below 100, so he's not getting necessarily the top amount of luck either. Which brings me to my question: let's say Dakota Joshua was healthy for tonight's game, which does not include Lindholm. Let's assume that too. Who comes out? Is it just as simple as Amon comes out? And where would he go? Right now in this lineup tonight, let's say, where would Dakota Joshua be slotted?
I wish I had an answer for you because look, Garland, Hoglander and Pettersson, they've found something. It's working. Right. So as much as Garland and Joshua were part of that best third line in hockey for a long stretch, I don't think in the short term that the Canucks, especially if you're going to have a guy like PDG in your top six, I think you need that Pettersson line running. And look, Hoglander was terrific the other night. And as much as guys like Garland and Hoglander getting a chance to play with Pettersson, it does feel like those players have been able to produce something that was lacking in Elias Pettersson here for far too long since the All-Star break. So it's been a nice fit there. I do wonder if, you know, you just kind of slot Dakota Joshua back into a third line role. I'm not sure ultimately who you'd play with, but maybe Pod Colson. If PDG doesn't make any sort of impact, I do wonder if Pod Colson gets a shot higher in the lineup to play with better players and see if he can't, you know, find that finishing luck that's been absent for him. Amon seems like the natural to come out of the lineup, sort of the least experienced. But Phil DiGiuseppe's not a lock either. I mean, lots of moving parts here.
Yeah.
And I think we're going to have to get used to that as we watch the Vancouver Canucks down these final 11 games and even into the playoffs. Like, it wouldn't surprise me, you know, not so much based on poor performances, but just Rick Tocchet trying to keep fresh legs in the lineup, using everybody. I mean, I think he trusts the guys that he has, his forward group here. So if Amon comes out, I don't know that it's necessarily that we never see Nils Amon again. And, you know, good for him. He scored the other night, but he's not really in the lineup to score. I think it's going to be fascinating to watch against the Kings here, because as much as I said Pia Suter is the third line center, at practice, he was with Podkolzin and Amon. I mean, you got two pretty young, inexperienced guys against a, you know, veteran-laden, deep Los Angeles team. I wonder if Bluger with Mikheyev and Lafferty isn't really the third line, and that those younger guys, like, you know, if it's a tight game in the third period, we saw Podkolzin get some shifts the other night against Calgary. That was encouraging. But I am curious, even if they line up as the third line on the depth chart, I wonder if Pia Suter is actually centering the fourth line for the Vancouver Canucks, if that's the way it all shakes down here against the Kings.
We do have to remind ourselves, I mean, the last time we covered home playoff games, I think Irfan Kafar was a 16-year-old Sportsnet intern. Something, he looked 16 anyway.
Covered those games in Calgary.
But you're right. I mean, the durability of the play, like past game three, we have to remind ourselves, Jeff, like, that's the storyline at the morning of every game in the playoffs is who's healthy, who can go. Like, we forget the ins and outs of the lineup on a nightly basis in the playoffs, especially after the first round. But even in the first round, I mean, it's a daily update on who's good to go, because you throw everything you can at those games.
Well, a reminder of that, and Irf just mentioned the games in Calgary, Alex Burrow's being carted out of the rink in an ambulance at morning skate. Like, you're right. You just never know. Just an aside there. I wasn't in Calgary for those games. I had bought a brand new car and was driving off the lot with the radio on. And I heard about Alex Burrows on a stretcher in an ambulance. And I'm thinking, like, does the radio not work on this thing? Like, hang on a sec. So remember distinctly where I was in that moment. And yeah, I mean, you just have to be prepared for just about everything come playoff time. But, you know, if you start as a healthy scratch or a black ace, that does not mean that you're not getting the lineup. So, you know, that's where staying ready mentally, physically, being prepared. And if you get that tap on the shoulder, you've got to go. The other thing, too, is that it looks like Abbotsford's going to play at least in the first round of the playoffs. Now, the first round in the American League is short. But in terms of black aces and those types of things, obviously the Canucks have to staff a farm team for those playoff games. So we'll have to wait and see. It'll be interesting to see kind of how many extra bodies ultimately and how long both the baby Canucks and the NHL Canucks last in their respective playoffs before we can get a better sense of who's available and who might get an opportunity in the playoffs.
Jeff, this team can clinch a playoff spot tonight with a little help, obviously, but I think when I look at it, you know, it's a nice little mark beside their name, a nice little, you know, another point this season where they can check off and click the boxes. How much do you think it means to some of these guys to be able to do it this early?
Yeah, I mean, it was funny. We've seen the scenarios here for a couple of days. People have started to do the research and write some articles. But when the NHL tweeted out this morning that the first place Vancouver Canucks can be the first team in the league to clinch a playoff spot, like, guys, if we went back to September and October and you had told me that, like, there's not a world in which I would have believed you. Like, so even though we've all covered this team day in, day out, when I saw that in print, and I just, like, honestly, I was shaking my head thinking, like, the first place Vancouver Canucks can be the first team in the league to clinch a playoff spot. And, like, it's going to happen. 98 points already. They're in. It's just a matter of getting that X beside their name. And they've got loftier goals than that. But, you know, a chance to get to 100 points as well. And I think that's pretty significant for this group, for all the hard work that they have done. And what a weekend for them. They won against Calgary. They get two losses in regulation from the Edmonton Oilers. So, you know, they're not breathing easy, but
500 does it though. 500 wins the division.
They should breathe a little easier. I mean, the math all adds up now, that just taking care of their own business here, with three more games to go on the homestand. So, you know, look, and I know you're asking, you know, what's the better result? The Canucks getting the job done, or they still have two games to go against Vegas. Like, the Vancouver Canucks are going to have a say in whether the Vegas Golden Knights are playoff bound. So I would say, I want to see the Canucks clinch the playoff spot on home ice. I think that's a moment that they want to share with their fans. They've got three left here on the homestand, so I think it's going to happen then. But I say, like anything, just get it done. They can't take the X away from you once it's there beside your name. So, you know, I see those sites that do the playoff odds on a daily basis. Like, as much as St. Louis beating Vegas would make things interesting, like, the playoff odds are still so heavily in the Golden Knights' favor. The other thing, too, guys, is, like, if the Canucks don't win this, if the Kings come out of this game with 2 points, like they creep that much closer to the Edmonton Oilers. So there is so much volatility still around the Canucks. I think in some ways that just focuses the Vancouver Canucks on, you know, don't worry about picking your opponent. You know, from Toronto, the last bunch of years, they've known since January they were going to play Tampa or they're going to play Boston. And I think sometimes that can be a distraction and maybe take your focus away. I think this allows Rick Tocchet to say, like, don't for a second worry about all the other noise in and around the playoff bar. You're going to get an opponent. It's going to be a good opponent in the West this year. But let those things play out and just focus on the task at hand. And that's continuing to play really solid defensive hockey. Don't give up much. Get off to another good start the way they have on this homestand. My goodness, opening the scoring in all six of the games, five of them in the first 5 minutes. Let's see if they can replicate that and get a jump on the LA Kings, who have opened the scoring in the first two meetings of the season. Obviously, the Kings were full value for their win here, 5-1, a couple of weeks ago. But I do think the Canucks, and I asked a few of them yesterday after practice, I think they feel that they sorted something out at crypto.com in how to break down that 1-3-1 and that passive defense. And so I think the Canucks are probably going to want to apply the lessons learned in a 2-1 overtime win against the Kings and do more of that here tonight.
The defensive pairings, are you buying that Roenick's got his own pair? That there, are you buying what we saw yesterday, or is that just let's see what happens?
I am, and again, yeah. I think it's somewhat opponent dictated here.
Interesting.
Like, okay. The Kings don't have the superstar, but I can't remember this late in the season a team that has three guys tied for the team scoring lead. They've got Kopitar, Kempe, and Fiala, all with 62 points. So there is this real balance, and Trevor Moore is their leading goal scorer. So, you know, a different name there. I think this is sort of to counter that a little bit and try to put some size on the different pairs because the Kings are physical when they get in on the forecheck. So, generally coaches play the way they practice. And there's nothing to say that they can't go back to Hughes and Hronek at any point in this game. I would expect at some stages you probably do see those two paired together. But yes, I am believing that the way that they lined up at practice on Sunday is probably the way that they're going to start this hockey game. And Ian Cole drawing back in after two games, whether it was injury-related or load management or a combination of both, I don't think you want it to leave a veteran sitting there for too long. So, you know, another case where Noah Juulsen didn't do anything to deserve to come out of the lineup, but I think this was just a matter of wanting to get the veteran Ian Cole back in there so that he wasn't sitting for too long.
Jonathan Lekker-Mäki reported to be coming to town for the next 8 to 10 days, maybe to pay some visit here in Vancouver and hang out with, you know, obviously the team and management and coaching staff. What do you think their plan is with him?
Yeah, asked the team yesterday for any sort of position on, you know, the report that's out there, any kind of update, and just nothing. No, nobody's saying anything around Lekker-Mäki and his arrival. So, you know, I'm certainly not going to dispute the reports that he's on his way here. But in terms of when he touches down, you know, there was a question, would he go to Abbotsford? Would he come to Vancouver? Yeah. Abbotsford, if I'm not mistaken, is out on the road and staying out on the road for a while here. So I would think that, you know, at the very least, this is an opportunity to bring him in, just get him around a team that is moving in the right direction, headed to the playoffs, get a feel for the rink. Because the last couple of years when Lekker-Mäki's come to development camp, there's been renovations in the summertime around Rogers Arena. So I don't know how much time he's even spent in that building because those camps were held out at UBC. So I think it's just familiarizing himself. You know, he's got this little gap in his schedule before he goes back to Sweden to get ready for the World Championship. So I don't think there's any harm in bringing him in. But, you know, it will be interesting to see sort of how prominent he is, how often, you know, he's made available to the media. I certainly hope we get an opportunity to talk to him and find out a little bit about, you know, his season and his plans here in the short term, but also moving forward. So we'll have to wait and see on that. But yeah, no official comment or even confirmation from the hockey club itself.
I'm putting us all on the spot here. I don't think there's anything CBA related that prevents him from practicing with the team, does there? I mean, if you can put your e-bugs out there and your practice goalies out there, presumably he's allowed to be on the ice. Would you practice him? Would you just show him what Canucks practice looks like? Is there value for that for Lekker-Mäki?
Well, I think at the very least you'd work him out with your skills coaches.
Yeah.
Like, I think sure. that this isn't a holiday. He's not coming to do like the house grind and
it's a business trip.
Yeah.
The sky gondola and whatever else. Like, there's lots to do here, obviously, in springtime. But I would think that he's bringing a hockey bag full of equipment. And so at the very least. But yeah, I mean, you're right. I don't think that there's anything that prevents him from taking part in a workout. But you got to keep in mind, too, like, this is all business for the Canucks in their final, you know, 10 sure. games and their approach to the playoffs. So having an extra body out there, you know, you had one in Dakota Joshua, but that's all about, you know, getting him reimmersed in this group. So I'm not sure that I would see him taking part in a full practice, but I could see him getting a couple of workouts in with the Canucks skills coaches.
And we've got the double days off between games before Dallas and then between Dallas and Anaheim. Are we assuming those are day off and practice days? They're not going to do double practices, are they?
I'm pretty sure that Tuesday is a day off. They have been skating straight through from whenever. I think last Wednesday was their last day off, and then between games and practices. So I am fully expecting Tuesday. I see that Rogers Arena has concerts the next couple of nights, so I think that probably makes the decision that much easier as well to take Tuesday off. Wednesday, they're probably out at UBC and then get ready for the Dallas Stars, and that's not going to be easy, and neither will the LA Kings. And then, you know, they wrap up the homestand against Anaheim on Sunday afternoon, Easter Sunday. The Ducks play in Edmonton on Saturday afternoon, so they're getting an Anaheim team that's coming in here on the back half of back-to-backs. You know, who knows what they look like by then, but certainly that feels like a game that the Vancouver Canucks just take care of business before you head back out on the road. So, you know, I think there'll be a couple of practices, but with the early start on Sunday, there won't be a morning skate there. So, yeah, I could see 2 days off and two practices here sort of over the course of the remainder of the week. And then we'll see. For me, if they can go 2-for-3 on the homestand, everybody would love them to go 3-for-3 and, you know, finish up 7-1-1. But if there's a blip in there, I still think a 6-2-1 homestand at totally this fine. Time of the year, absolutely an overwhelming success in terms of doing what they had to do to fend off this charging Oilers team that has hit a little bit of a skid right now. So take them one at a time. If they get this one tonight, then that obviously sets them up to have a really successful week here. But the Kings have not been easy to play against, and we'll see what they look like this evening.
Jeff, thank you for this. Appreciate it. Hopefully we get a good one. 6 o'clock start. You don't be late. Make sure you're not late for the rink. And we will talk to you later on in the week.
Well, we like the 6 o'clock start, though, because that allows us to get cracking on rink wide a little bit earlier and get that out at an earlier hour. And by the way, 500th episode. Rink-wide Vancouver.
Wow. So,
little milestone.
And maybe on clinching night. Wouldn't that be fun?
Yeah, and the 100-point night as well. So lots going on.
Thanks,
we'll document it. Whatever happens, yeah, we'll be there rink-wide later on this evening.
Sakaris and Price featuring Irv Kafar today. Presentation of the Applewood Auto Group. And we'd like to remind you and invite you to join us and the rest of the Canucks Army crew Saturday, April the 20th at Hollywood Theater in Kitsilano. A special tribute to our late friend Jason Botchford, presented by Fountain Tire. Bro, do your playoffs. It's a media event celebrating the life and legacy of Jason. Features some shared memories, special guests, an exclusive performance from the matinee. But most of all, a celebration of Vancouver's triumphant return to the playoffs. It's going to be a hockey night, folks. Plus, this event is all in support of BC Mental Health Foundation. Tickets to the event are just $10, so join us on April the 20th. It's going to be a really fun night, memorable experience. Every ticket purchase contributes to making a positive impact on the community. Get your tickets right now at nationgear.ca. Still some scuttlebutt, despite all the promotions to the contrary, that the playoffs begin on that Monday. People are still thinking the playoffs might begin on that night. I find that hard to believe. You brought this up with me. You're not the first one to bring it up, but they play Thursday. I can't imagine that first game is Saturday, because that gives one day off. A, coming off the road, we often say first game back after a long, it's not a long road trip, it's only a one gamer, but first game back after a road trip is basically just another game on the road if you only got the one day off,
because true.
You're in a different city.
And time zone.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's like you're just on another road trip. So you're flushing home ice advantage if you do that on Saturday.
I'm not saying, I'm just saying things I've heard. They're going to push it back. I think it's building availability, trying to get things started quicker if you're the NHL and then wanting to as well. But building availability was the big one. Now, I don't really know what concerts are there or what things that can't be moved, but it would be quite interesting if they do start on that Saturday.
I mean, that would be, it'd kind of make the event a lot more fun too. It'd be like a pregame event for all of us at Hollywood Theater. So we'll see how it all plays out.
Would you be upset if it was like a Sunday afternoon game one here? would it have to be like a night game for game one?
No.
I think it'd be great.
Sunday afternoon would be fine. Yeah. Like, it's weather dependent. If it's a gloomy Sunday, it's kind of a write-off. If it's a day like it was yesterday, can you imagine?
Oh, yeah.
Like, I had a beer on my front porch at 7:30 p.m. last night.
The city would be bananas. It's going to be anyways.
It'd be so fun. You know, like, that is, and that's actually kind of the beauty of the playoffs being pushed the extra week this year, is that the better chance for just like that that spring playoff vibe is going to be really strong. So really fun. Not much of a vibe at BC Place yesterday on Saturday for the Whitecaps. Really nice opening goal. And they seem to do this versus RSL. They get the opening goal. They get the lead. Demir Krylak, of course, the ex-RSL player of 60 seasons. The storyline was perfect. And it wasn't a scintillating game, but it had its moments. It was like it was sort of stagnant for 10 minutes, and then they go back and forth for 10 minutes. And it was an okay game from a Canucks or from a Whitecaps perspective. And then in the second half, RSL just the better team. And they get two goals, and there's the first loss of the season. And all of a sudden, it's always great to get road wins, but they don't have a home win through two matches. And that's sort of the thing in MLS, in soccer, but in MLS in particular, you win your home matches. They don't have one through two.
Well, I know, and the Vancouver Whitecaps have done such a good job at being, like, I mean, even the last season and things like that, just being that relevant team again. They're getting 20,000 tickets sold to every single home match, and, you know, all the buzz about, you know, the messy match and things like that, and this new team and things of that nature. And yeah, if you don't start winning or getting positive results on your home turf, I mean, we've seen in this market, you know, people are going to slowly start to fade away. I don't care how good you are, how many superstars you have, people will just stop going.
Yeah, we're not there yet.
No.
They're still 2-1-1.
Yep.
If they had won that game, they would have been in first place. But yeah, you don't want this to go on much longer. And they've got this long home spell now, back at it this week. They'll just try to use the allure of a Cascadia rival taking on the Timbers. Vanni Sartini back on the touchline for his debut. And Mike D'Agostino did yeoman's work, of course, going 2-1-1 is the interim head coach. But you'd hope there's a new coach bump for Vanni Sartini coming back and guiding the Whitecaps through it. So we'll see what the Whitecaps and Timbers have up their sleeves coming up. Almost a banner week on the PGA Tour. Adam Hadwin, top 10 finish. Matt Hughes, he's not a BC boy, but Matt Hughes was T3. But Adam Hadwin needs a little traction. He's been up and down, mostly down lately. To get a top 10, that's big for the Abbey boy.
No, absolutely. And I think that, you know, you just look at it and up and down, you mentioned, but it's also like a lot of these Canadian guys, him, Corey Connors, you know.
Corey Connors had a tough spell too.
Nick Taylor as well, but you know, I think it's everybody just kind of getting ready for that Masters now. It's getting playing all these tournaments, is doing what you need to do to get yourselves ready. But Hadwin's kind of been up and down, like you just mentioned, for the most part. But it'll be interesting to see kind of what happens over the next couple of weeks.
Nice result there, nonetheless. And finally, I have not been that caught by March Madness this season. I think the lack of Cinderella wins is probably a big reason. Caught the odd game. What has attracted me, though, is Zach Edey's performance, particularly in that opening game. A 30-20 in the opening game.
Yep.
A ho-hum, what is he, 23-14 in the second game? But they ran a roughshod in the second half there to get another victory. It looked like he was just going to be a tall guy that could rebound. It's not the case anymore for Zach Edey.
No, he's a tall guy that can rebound and score. Even before that 30-21, 28-11, 29-12, 25-14. Dude's a monster on both ends. The interesting thing, I think, of the lack of Cinderella, Blake, is because of the portal and guys being able to transfer. Like, some schools used to have this stud superstar guy that could kind of navigate them through taking over
couple
games.
Rounds, yeah.
But now guys are like, well, I'm going to Connecticut, mm-hmm. or I'm going to UConn, or I'm going to you know, Purdue. I'm going somewhere else. Like, the money's
after that first good
after
year.
After that first good year, yeah. They're out.
Is Zach Edey on the Olympic team?
I think based on performance alone, you have to put him there. I think the experience for him would be invaluable, but I also think that he's proving that he can play at a very high level.
He came off, he was a pretty skinny kid early on in his collegiate career.
Yeah.
And I was a little bit worried that, again, he was just going to be a tall and ineffective player. he seems to have a little bit more aggression now, and I wonder if he's going to be a useful player in certain situations. He's added some weight. I'm intrigued by what Zach Edey could bring to the Canadian men's national team. And, you know, if there's injuries and issues, they're going to need bodies. I don't know. I think he could be a very intriguing option here for the Canadians. Our poll question on Friday asked, is Nikita Zadorov worth $5.1 million over 4 years? Almost 2,100 votes on this one. I'll give you a hint. It was a one-third split. Which one? Yes or no? Is Zadorov worth 5.1 over 4 years? That was the AFP analytics number.
No.
No won the poll. 66% said no, but 33, I mean, 33.6 saying yes. I mean, that's still a notable contingent of people that believe he's worth 5.1.
Well, like if I'm him, or if I'm like a guy like Elias Lindholm, and I'm looking around and, you know, this is probably one of the better years to be an unrestricted free agent.
Yep.
Like,
yep.
You're going to get your bank. Someone's going to pay for you. And the one thing that Nikita Zadorov has going very well for him is he's a very big defenseman, not afraid to stand up for his teammates. I mean, he scored 2 goals in that game, but yeah, if I'm the Canucks, I'm not paying him $5 million. Like, you just can't.
What are you willing to pay?
4.5, yeah. Maybe 4.25, right?
Yeah, like, you're not getting 4.25, but you might get 4.5. I mean, if would you do that for 5 years?
You're gonna have to give him term. That's probably the only way he's gonna stay. But you have to get the AAV down. You're probably gonna have to give him term.
Yeah. Yeah, it's he's up the physicality of late. It's really interesting. You know, the salary cap spending, though, to me, it's like having a $25 gift card this offseason. It's like you've got a gift card, like they're getting a salary, but it's not like it's scads of money. And you have any, if you had total confidence that it's going to be another $5 million bump next season, well, then sure, you could start to spend some dough, but I'm just not convinced yet. Maybe it's the economy that we live in right now, inflation and all that, but I'm not convinced that it's just going to be this avalanche of cap space over the next few years. So I think you still do have to be careful. Nice that you got your $25 gift card,
yeah,
but it's only going to take you so far.
Spend it wisely.
Yeah.
And I think when you look at it, there's a lot of players and, you know, a lot of different markets, not just here in Vancouver. Well, the guy loves the city, loves playing here. You know what else hockey players like doing is getting paid.
Mm-hmm.
And you absolutely should. I mean, he's probably got a family he needs to take care of and things like that. So guys are going to go out and get their money. I really don't think hometown discounts or quote unquote hometown discounts are there anymore. And you're starting to see it now with some of these with some of these deals.
Don't forget, if you ever want to get in contact with us, send us a message into the text message inbox. It's all presented by Great Clips, your official hair salon of the National Hockey League. And this is where we talk about our errors and omissions on the show, Irfan. And I couldn't find a ton. By the way, errors and omissions brought to you by the fine folks at Yellow Dog Brewing. On sale now, the Yellow Dog Chase My Tail Pale Ale 4-packs. 473 mils in those 4-packs. On special for the month of March. Look for it. On sale at private and government liquor stores. As usual, Yerkes on the prowl. This time, thankfully, it's just an omission that he was following up on, and we do appreciate the diligence, Yerke, that you do provide for us. Confirming Blake Price's notion that the NHL did the home white color jersey swap partway through a season. Do you remember that?
Yep.
I think it predated you. What year were you born?
88.
You don't remember. You were three. It was 91, 92.
I do remember they had white at home.
No, but there was a season which they flipped halfway through.
Oh.
And they did. That's when they started the color jerseys at home. 91-92 season. That was before alternate jerseys, when it was quite simple, says Yerke. Teams just had two jerseys. Remember those simple times? Just two jerseys. He didn't have this one for the special one. Oh, there's our outdoor, you know, game jersey and all that sort of stuff. But yeah, they did it once. I think fans would get into that.
Yeah, the jerseys for us are to yell and cry about now because we're getting older, but it's for the kids for the most part. It's selling, right? The jerseys, that's why they have a million of them that they sell. But wouldn't it be great? White skate jersey, first playoff game at home in forever. Oh, that'd be awesome. I would love that. The white out at Rogers Arena.
Stop getting hopes up.
That's not happening.
You can't do that. You have to submit all that stuff before the season begins, so you can't just make a new jersey in the middle of the season. Now, for the home opener next year. You could do something like that. Yellow skate, white skate. You could maybe, if the NHL does another reverse retro, I threw this out last week, you do the red skate, and we saw Dakota Joshua in a red skate jersey of sorts, the practice jersey. So yeah, all those are possibilities. So anything else, Grady? Any other E's and O's?
Nope.
Then that's it. Irv, thanks for this. It was fun.
Thanks, Blake.
Let's do it again.
Absolutely. Anytime you need.
And looking forward to your contributions the rest of the week. Matt is back as well. That's the Kerrison Price for today. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince, they exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.